们大家好，今天是4月22号星期三，欢迎收看美国观察。全美新冠病毒确诊病例将近80万例，而死亡人数超过4万人。美国众议院外交事务委员会亚太小组委员会主席阿米贝拉议员此前是一名内科医生，他最近接受了美国之音记者张佩芝的专访，谈到全球新冠疫情暴露了世界供应链过度依赖中国的问题。我们今天播出专访的第一部分。
Congressman Barra, thank you so much for speaking with Voice of America Mandarin Service from your district.
Thanks, I'm glad to be on Voice of America.
How are your constituents coping with the pandemic?
I think like everyone throughout the country and around the world, you know, staying at home is not normally what we do. We're an interactive species as human beings, but I think the people here in California and Sacramento County are really following those stay-at-home orders andYou know, it does seem to be working. We've flattened the curve here in Sacramento County, and you know, hopefully within the next few weeks, we can start contemplating what reopening looks like.
You are in a very unique position to talk about the COVID-19 pandemic. In addition to being the House Foreign Affairs Committee Subcommittee on Asia and the Pacific, you are also a doctor by trade. When and how did you first about that there is this mysterious virus outbreak in China? And as a physician, what was your first reaction?
You know, as a doctor and a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee, one of my focus areas has been global health security and pandemic preparedness. So it's a small group of people. And really at the end of 2019 in December, we started to hear some stories, but really it was early January of 2020 that you started to understand that there was a novel coronavirus, a new coronavirus that was discovered in Wuhan. And then you saw the dramatic steps that you know, China was taking in terms of quarantining an entire city and an entire province. And that's when you know, we really understood that this wasn't like SARS or MERS. This was you know, something a little bit different. That's when you know, we worked with the CDC and others to try to get our scientists and doctors to the hotspot. Unfortunately, it was a little bit slow.
So 4 months later, we are now in a global pandemic. And looking back at this very brief time frame, what did you think that we did right? And what could we have done better in the United States?
The things that we should have done early, and you know, my first interaction with the administration was on January 23rd. And the things we suggested at that time was we understood we would our public health system would need additional billions of dollars. So we had made a request to say, tell us what you need and we will do a supplemental bill at that time in early February, late January. In addition, we really should have pushed harder to allow our scientists and the global scientists to get into China so we could better understand what we were dealing with. That unfortunately didn't happen. And then, you know, our own challenge with ramping up our diagnostic testing capability and, you know, making sure those diagnostic tests were accurate and available to folks, that we should take some ownership over. That was a mistake on our part. But, you know, that led us to only one recourse, which was the mitigation effort, the stay-at-home effort to slow down the spread of this virus. And that's where we find ourselves right now.
You have been urging the Trump administration to create a national testing strategy and to widely and rapidly deploy antibody testing and contact tracing. Can you elaborate more on why it is so important to take these steps?
Yes, as, you know, I don't disagree with the administration wanting to lift some of the stay-at-home orders, but we have to do it safely and when we have the resources to do that. So a national recovery strategy really is on a few pieces. One, we have to have the diagnostic testing capability. So we know this virus will likely be with us for another year, maybe 2 years. And in that time, we will continue to see clusters of cases. That requires us to quickly go out, test the symptomatic patient, make the diagnosis, and then do the contact tracing to try to limit the spread of that cluster. You saw South Korea actually fairly effectively apply that strategy early on when they experienced their first cases of COVID-19. So we can't think about opening up until we have the diagnostic testing capability. Second, we have to have the serologic testing capabilities as well. That's the antibody test that will tell us, you know, if you were exposed to the virus, had the virus and recovered from the virus, and now you have some protection and immunity. That will help us make determinations of how many people in a community or across the country are actually safe and at very low risk of getting reinfected. And lastly, we need the public health workforce to go out and do the contact tracing, the testing, et cetera. We don't have that workforce, and we're estimating that could be up to 100,000 individuals that will quickly have to hire, train, and deploy around the country. That's also part of this recovery strategy. So we need to do all three almost immediately. So if we think about opening in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whenever it is safe, then we have those resources in place.
So for many people in at home and abroad, one of the most shocking things to see is that our doctors and nurses, healthcare professionals, first responders, essential workers do not have adequate PPE or personal protective equipment. What can the Congress and the administration do to ensure that from this point on, our frontline workers have enough of these PPE that they need to protect themselves from the virus?
I think what this pandemic has exposed is the global supply chain, and really how a lot of these equipments and personal protective equipment and some of the reagents for testing, et cetera, come from a single source, and that single source was China. And if we're so over-reliant on one country, then if that country, which is where the pandemic started, shuts down, that's going to have a ripple effect all across the supply chain. And I think that's something we, as not just the United States, but the global community, will have to discuss and look at as how we build redundancy. In the immediate term, though, we have to ramp up our own manufacturing capabilities, make sure there's plenty of personal protective equipment for our first responders, our doctors, our nurses. But then also, if we don't have the testing reagents and the test kits, we should be ramping up and manufacturing our own as well. Again, that's to deal with the immediate crisis. Longer term, we really will have to take a close look at the supply chains of not just protective equipment, of testing equipment, but also of pharmaceuticals, because you have to have redundancy in the supply chain.
So everybody now, and you mentioned it before, that everybody is now talking about reopening the economy and how and when to do that. What signs would you like to see before you can comfortably say, let's reopen the economy?
So the metrics we have to look at before we can say it's safe to reopen the economy is hospital admissions. So the number of people that are showing up at the hospital and are sick enough to be admitted. The number of people who are in the hospital who are being admitted to intensive care units, ICU admissions, those are two very important metrics, which as long as those numbers are going up, we know that the virus is still spreading across our community. Once we see those numbers go down, we still may continue to see the number of new cases go up, because as we ramp up testing capabilities, we certainly will be making more diagnosis. But, and we still may see the number of deaths continue to go up, because that's the indicator looking back about 2 weeks as to where the community was. But once we see hospital admissions and intensive care unit admissions starting to go down, then we can say, well, maybe we're past this curve and we are on the downward side. We still will want to wait 2 weeks to make sure that there's not another recurrence or spread of the virus. But that seems to be the life cycle of the virus. And if cases come down, hospital admissions come down, ICU admissions come down, after that 2 week period, you can say, you know what, we may be ahead of this virus, and let's start thinking about those other measures of letting certain parts of the population that are less vulnerable return to the workforce, or at least start opening up some additional activities.
What message would you like to send to the Voice of America's worldwide audience at this moment during the pandemic?
To the folks that are watching on Voice of America, this pandemic is a wake-up call for all of us, both as a community, as the United States of America, but really as the global community. We're all connected. We are all in this together. This pandemic will impact all of our lives in many ways. But if we stick together, if we stay as a global community, we will come out of this stronger and more resilient and hopefully in a better place. And if we learn from this, we as a world will work together to prevent the next pandemic. We will work together to try to address the issues that this pandemic will expose, like vulnerable populations, et cetera. And it is my hope that we can come out in a more cooperative place as a planet.
美国国会共和党资深议员克里斯·史密斯表示，香港民主派的活动人士被捕的事件令人震惊。他还表示，香港特首应该保护香港人民的基本权利。来看报道。 美国国会众议院资深共和党议员克里斯·史密斯星期一发表声明说，特首林郑月娥必须立即澄清中联办是否受基本法规管。他还呼吁林郑月娥保护香港人的基本权利，抵制大陆政府或共产党在香港内政中的任何非法侵占。约15名香港民主派主要活动人士4月18日被拘捕，其中包括民主党创党主席李柱铭、前法律界立法会议员吴霭宜以及一传媒创办人李志英等。 史密斯议员在声明中说，香港当局令人震惊的逮捕行动凸显出特朗普政府有必要确保我们的新法律要求进行的审议，这可能导致中国和香港政府官员的任意拘留和其他虐待行为实施制裁。特朗普总统去年11月签署了《香港人权与民主法案》，使之成为法律。史密斯议员是法案众院版本的起草人。史密斯议员表示，法案生效后，需在180天内向国会提交报告。 指出，对破坏香港基本自由和自治负有责任的人，他说，这意味着报告可以在任何时候发布，但不能晚于2020年5月25日。史密斯议员是美国国会及行政当局中国委员会的首席共和党人，他就中国人权状况举行了超过60场听证会。美国之音新闻报道。
美国总统特朗普表示，为了应对新冠疫情造成的经济困境，美国将暂停移民。我们来看美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅的报道。 截至美国时间4月21号星期二的中午为止呢，美国境内感染了新型冠状病毒的病例人数达到了大约80万人，而死亡人数呢也到达了43000人。那么在4月20号星期一的晚上，特朗普总统在他的推特上发表言论说呢，他说要因应新型冠状病毒疫情所带来的经济冲击，他考虑要暂停移民。他的推文是这样写的，特朗普总统说呢，考虑来自隐形敌人的 攻击以及保护伟大美国公民的工作需求，我将签署一项行政命令暂停移民进入美国。那么在星期二的上午呢，白宫的发言人麦克伊兰尼则是针对特朗普总统的说法也发出了声明，表示支持。他是这样说的，他的声明当中说，面对这史无前例的时刻，特朗普总统坚定地要保护美国公民的健康和经济利益。正如特朗普总统所说的， 十年来的移民造就了我们公民的低工资和高失业，尤其在非裔美国人和拉丁裔的族群。此时，正当美国人盼望回到工作岗位上，我们必须采取行动。那其实呢，在星期一晚上的白宫这个疫情的简报会上呢，特朗普总统也已经提到了他的这个移民政策，也就是要新建美墨之间的这个边境高墙。我们来听一下特朗普总统在白宫的简报会上是怎么说的。
Day one, you're here. We're building the generals in charge of the wall on the southern border, and we want to build 450 miles of wall, and it's very much under construction.
不过呢，特朗普总统还有白宫官员都没有针对所谓的暂停移民到底是针对哪一方面的移民，那是已经申请了移民会受到影响，还是新的移民会受到拒绝，还有呢要怎么样来进行，这方面呢都还没有提出具体的细节。此外呢，在星期二的将近中午的时候，白宫的国家安全顾问奥布莱恩呢则是接受记者访问，那么被记者问到呢，这个在星期一的晚上有新闻报道说， 朝鲜最高领导人金正恩可能病危的报道。那么对此呢，这个美国的国安顾问奥布莱恩则是说，现在会密切的观察。那么提到新型冠状病毒的时候呢，他说这个病毒是来自中国，中国有责任要确保他们制造的防护装置可以送到需要的地区，并且呢，美国要跟中国合作来确保不会再发生。那奥布莱恩同时呢，他也呼吁说，中国要尽量的配合，让美国的这个 调查人员能够到现场实地的勘查，来确保这个病毒到底是来自武汉的实验室，还是来自野味的市场。以上是美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅发自白宫前的报道。
美国多地爆发抗议，反对政府为了应对新冠疫情而采取的社交隔离措施。与此同时，乔治亚州的州长率先宣布，该州将于周五开始逐步重启经济。来看报道。
星期一，关于何时解除居家令的激烈辩论有所加剧，在更多的州爆发了示威游行，示威者要求结束封锁。在一些州，抗议和反抗议者出现了对峙局面。
I don't want people to die. It's money versus lives. Tell me how it isn't. I want to hear your point of view.
Money and jobs is how we all provide for our families. I'm a self-employed business owner. My wife and I started a business about 10 years ago. My business is being decimated as we speak.
星期一在宾夕法尼亚州的哈里斯堡举行的这场有数百人参加的反封锁抗议活动中，许多人穿着亲特朗普的衣装，还有人携带枪支。他们聚集在州议会大厦外面，抗议他们的公民自由遭到侵犯。上个星期，批评人士指责特朗普总统在周五一系列推文中煽动抗议活动，呼吁抗议者解放明尼苏达、密西根和维吉尼亚州，说第二修正案受到了危害。星期天，在科罗拉多州丹佛市，身着医疗服装的反抗议者站在路的中间，拦住一辆载有反封锁标语的汽车。在大多数州，为了减缓病毒的传播而实行的居家令和广泛关闭店面的措施已经使美国经济萎靡，并使至少2200万人失业，造成1930年代大萧条以来从未出现过的失业率。经济损害导致人们为放松社交距离等限制加大了呼声，尤其是最近几天，新冠肺炎住院率以及疫情爆发严重性的指标开始趋于平缓的情况下，更助长了这种呼声。一些州长和州卫生官员已经敦促谨慎行事，直到具有更多检测能力为主，同时警告说，如果封锁提前结束，美国将面临第二波甚至更致命的感染浪潮。纽约州是美国疫情最严重的地区，州长安德鲁·库莫在每日例行新闻发布会上说，他明白为什么有人抗议，但那样无济于事。
Nobody disagrees that we want to get out of this situation. Nobody. You don't need protests to convince anyone in this country that we have to get back to work and we have to get the economy going and we have to get out of our homes. Nobody.
库莫州长说，在纽约重新开放之前，测试能力要加大力度，并再次呼吁联邦政府帮助达成这个目标。特朗普总统在星期一的一系列推文中说，州长们已经从抱怨呼吸机匮乏转为担心没有足够的资源来大范围测试，指责他们是在玩非常危险的政治游戏。
Given the favorable data，
同时，乔治亚州州长宣布，乔治亚将从本周五，也就是4月24号开始逐步重新开放生意。
We will allow gyms, fitness centers, bowling alleys, body art studios, barbers, cosmetologists, hair designers, nail care artists, estheticians, their respective schools, and massage therapists to reopen their doors this Friday, April 24th.
但乔治亚州不会照常重新开放所有营业场所，酒吧和夜总会将继续关闭。
Each of these entities will be subject to specific restrictions, including adherence to the minimum basic operations, social distancing, and regular sanitation.
包括俄亥俄、密西根、德克萨斯和佛罗里达在内的其他几个州也表示，他们还打算在5月1日或更早的时候重新开放经济活动。美国之音电视报道。
尽管中国各地陆续复工，新冠肺炎的疫情仍在发展。这场疫情对您的家人、生活和工作计划带来什么样的冲击和影响？您所在的社区和城市目前疫情如何？欢迎您通过电邮将您录制的音频、视频或文字图片跟我们分享。我们的电邮是 mystory@voanews.com mystory@voanews.com。也欢迎您留下您的联系方式，我们的记者会尽快与您联系。
在新冠疫情的冲击之下，美国的农产品需求大量减少，而在主要的蔬果产地加利福尼亚州，当地的农民不得不销毁一些还没有成熟的庄稼。来看报道。
在加利福尼亚州杰克维西的农场，拖拉机在一排排的绿叶生菜中犁过，但它并不是在收割这一季的蔬菜，相反的，它正在摧毁这些蔬菜。美国各地餐馆停业，冲击到全美的食物供应链，直接影响到农地里还没有采摘的农产品。加利福尼亚州是美国最大的出产水果和蔬菜的州，维西估计这个生菜田将出产80,000多箱农产品现在被毁掉了。他的意思是，价值100多万美元的食物被浪费掉了。
You know, you're seeing here behind me is very difficult, not just for me, you know, on the economic side, but emotional side as well. Everybody on this ranch, it's kind of like your blood, sweat, and tears in this crop. Many hours away from your family, producing a crop to maturity, and not to see it harvested and being able to feed the nation is stressful and hurtful and emotionally tough.
对维西来说，摧毁庄稼的决定并不容易。他不得不解雇150多个季节性劳动力。他说，他没有理由为没人要买的庄稼支付劳工、包装和储存的费用。西部农业协会主席戴夫·普利亚说，解决这场危机的唯一方法就是联邦采取措施，让像维西这样的农民能维持下去。
There was no way to anticipate that this would happen. If you're a farmer who made this investment, you couldn't have seen this coming. We need federal dollars to help bridge farmers through this moment and let them survive for another season.
维西对全美各地的农民能度过这场灾难仍怀抱希望，但目前他不得不让他的绿叶被切成碎片。美国之音新闻报道。
早在美国政府要求民众外出佩戴口罩之前，一位有着护士资格证的时装设计师就已经开始设计并且制作口罩，我们一起去看一看。
这是洛杉矶一名注册护士兼时装设计师的作品。
It does have elastic ear loops. It also has a nose wire to have it adjust to the size of your nose and to squeeze down.And then also there is a pouch.
In one on the other side.
在美国疾控中心修订其指南并开始建议人们戴上口罩之前，索尼亚·史密斯康一直在研究设计和制作口罩，充分利用服装公司多余的面料，因为他听说医护人员需要口罩。他将自己的作品放在社交媒体上，反应强烈。
All of a sudden, overnight, we got hundreds of not only requests from healthcare professionals, but also from individuals who may have underlying conditions or just want to shop or walk outside.
他每卖出一个口罩，都会捐赠一个给医护人员或急救人员。索尼亚已经向全国医疗保健工作人员寄送了数百个口罩。
As quickly as we're making them, we're shipping them.
根据销售手工制品的电子商务网站 Etsy 的说法，口罩是最近两周内搜索最频繁的产品。该网站甚至为制作口罩的卖家创建了指南。疾控中心建议人们在公共场合戴布口罩，因为研究表明，许多无症状新冠患者可以将病毒传播给他人，戴上口罩会有预防效果。
So you're not really trying to prevent somebody from infecting you. You're trying to prevent infecting other people.
菲拉斯扎巴涅监督休斯顿卫理公会8家医院的感染控制项目，他警告说，戴口�罩的人仍然需要遵守6英尺的距离规则，并确保戴口罩时不要总去用手触碰它。
Humans are not used to wearing masks, so if they do not practice good hand hygiene, they can actually contaminate the mask if they keep adjusting it, removing it, wearing around the neck and so on.
疾控中心要求公众佩戴布口罩，把医用口罩和 N95 口罩留给医护人员。同时，索尼娅和他的团队将继续缝制、出售和捐赠口罩给需要的人。美国之音记者李爱琳，洛杉矶报道。
一位99岁的英国二战英雄，原本打算为抗击新冠疫情的医疗人员筹募1000美元，结果却筹募到了惊人的1600万美元。我们一起去看一看。
汤姆·摩尔上尉希望在他100岁生日前，在自己的花园里走100圈，来为英国国民保健系统慈善组织筹款1000英镑。他不久前完成挑战的时候，已经筹集了大约1300万英镑，相当于1600万美元。而捐款仍在继续涌入。
It's unbelievable that people will be so kind to give that source of money to the National Health Service. And maybe I was responsible for starting it, but not deliberately. It was purely, shall we say, gratitude for what they've done for me.
摩尔上尉所属团队的军人在他徒步的最后一圈为他组织了荣誉卫队。摩尔将于4月30日满100岁。他想为英国的国民保健系统筹募基金，以感谢他所谓的杰出员工。这些员工在治疗他的癌症和髋关节骨折期间照料他，捐款将立即分配运用。
It's going straight to the front line of the NHS, the staff, the volunteers, the patients, and supporting them.
英国卫生大臣最近代表全国发言。
Captain Tom, you're an inspiration to us all, and we thank you.
在二战期间，摩尔上尉曾在印度和缅甸服役，而现在他像大多数英国人一样，在封锁期间被困在家中。他的生存秘诀是保持乐观。
The thing is, remember, tomorrow is a good day. Tomorrow you will maybe find everything be much better than today.
这是一个振奋人心的明智之语。他的募款努力将有助于拯救生命，并且证明一个人可以带来巨大的改变。美国之音记者李奇威尔伦敦报道。
一位艺术家为了表达对新奥尔良市一家医疗中心的工作人员的感激，在人行道上绘制了粉笔画来问候他们。我们一起去看一看。
这是个简单的举动，让医院的许多员工笑逐颜开。
So as you're walking in, it says, "If you're just arriving, thank you for what you're about to do." And then as you walk a little bit further, it says, "You are extraordinary."
这家医院儿科部门第一年的住院实习医生莱斯利·米勒会停下脚步，浏览这个神秘作家留下来的缤纷的信息。
And then as you leave and you're walking out to go home, it says, "If you are leaving, thank you. Rest well." So it was very sweet of whoever did that. It definitely meant a lot to me, and it was a surprise, a colorful surprise walking out.
实验室技术员米歇尔·瓦马丁说。这些信息让人满心温暖。
Oh, it's nice. It's really nice. Yeah, give us hope.
新奥尔良在路易斯安那州，到目前为止，确诊的感染新冠病毒的病例已经超过20000个。奥克斯纳医疗中心是这个地区最大的医院之一，最近已经把常规病房转变为重症监护病房，以应付新冠病毒患者急增的需要。美国之音迪亚洛综合报道。
好的，以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容，感谢您的收看，我们明天节目再见。今天是4月22号，星期三，欢迎收看《美国观察》。全美新冠病毒确诊病例将近80万例，而死亡人数超过4万人。美国众议院外交事务委员会亚太小组委员会主席阿米贝拉议员此前是一名内科医生，他最近接受了美国之音记者张佩芝的专访，谈到全球新冠疫情暴露了世界供应链过度依赖中国的问题。我们今天播出专访的第一部分。
Congressman Barra, thank you so much for speaking with Voice of America Mandarin Service from your district.
Thanks. I'm glad to be on Voice of America.
How are your constituents coping with the pandemic?
I think like everyone throughout the country and around the world, you know, staying at home is not normally what we do. We're an interactive species as human beings. But I think the people here in California and Sacramento County are really following those stay-at-home orders. And, you know, it does seem to be working. We've flattened the curve here in Sacramento County. And, you know, hopefully within the next few weeks, we can start contemplating what reopening looks like.
You are in a very unique position to talk about the COVID-19 pandemic. In addition to being the House Foreign Affairs Committee Subcommittee on Asia and the Pacific, you are also a doctor by trade. When and how did you first about that there is this mysterious virus outbreak in China? And as a physician, what was your first reaction?
You know, as a doctor and a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee, one of my focus areas has been global health security and pandemic preparedness. So it's a small group of people. And really at the end of 2019 in December, we started to hear some stories, but really it was early January of 2020 that you started to understand that there was a novel coronavirus, a new coronavirus that was discovered in Wuhan. And then you saw the dramatic steps that, you know, China was taking in terms of quarantining an entire city and an entire province. And that's when, you know, we really understood that this wasn't like SARS or MERS. This was, you know, something a little bit different. That's when, you know, we worked with the CDC and others to try to get our scientists and doctors to the hotspot. Unfortunately, it was a little bit slow.
So 4 months later, we are now in a global pandemic. And looking back at this very brief time frame, what did you think that we did right? And what could we have done better in the United States?
The things that we should have done early, and you know, my first interaction with the administration was on January 23rd. And the things we suggested at that time was we understood we would our public health system would need additional billions of dollars. So we had made a request to say, tell us what you need and we will do a supplemental bill at that time in early February, late January. In addition, we really should have pushed harder to allow our scientists and the global scientists to get into China so we could better understand what we were dealing with. That unfortunately didn't happen. And then, you know, our own challenge with ramping up our diagnostic testing capability and, you know, making sure those diagnostic tests were accurate and available to folks, that we should take some ownership over. That was a mistake on our part. But, you know, that led us to only one recourse, which was the mitigation effort, the stay-at-home effort to slow down the spread of this virus. And that's where we find ourselves right now.
You have been urging the Trump administration to create a national testing strategy and to widely and rapidly deploy antibody testing and contact tracing. Can you elaborate more on why it is so important to take these steps?
Yes, as, you know, I don't disagree with the administration wanting to lift some of the stay-at-home orders, but we have to do it safely and when we have the resources to do that. So a national recovery strategy really is on a few pieces. One, we have to have the diagnostic testing capability. So we know this virus will likely be with us for another year, maybe 2 years. And in that time, we will continue to see clusters of cases. That requires us to quickly go out, test the symptomatic patient, make the diagnosis, and then do the contact tracing to try to limit the spread of that cluster. You saw South Korea actually fairly effectively apply that strategy early on when they experienced their first cases of COVID-19. So we can't think about opening up until we have the diagnostic testing capability. Second, we have to have the serologic testing capabilities as well. That's the antibody test that will tell us, you know, if you were exposed to the virus, had the virus and recovered from the virus, and now you have some protection and immunity. That will help us make determinations of how many people in a community or across the country are actually safe and at very low risk of getting reinfected. And lastly, we need the public health workforce to go out and do the contact tracing, the testing, et cetera. We don't have that workforce, and we're estimating that could be up to 100,000 individuals that will quickly have to hire, train, and deploy around the country. That's also part of this recovery strategy. So we need to do all three almost immediately. So if we think about opening in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whenever it is safe, then we have those resources in place.
So for many people in at home and abroad, one of the most shocking things to see is that our doctors and nurses, healthcare professionals, first responders, essential workers do not have adequate PPE or personal protective equipment. What can the Congress and the administration do to ensure that from this point on, our frontline workers have enough of these PPE that they need to protect themselves from the virus?
I think what this pandemic has exposed is the global supply chain and really how a lot of these equipments and personal protective equipment and some of the reagents for testing, et cetera, come from a single source, and that single source was China. And if we're so over-reliant on one country, then if that country, which is where the pandemic started, shuts down, that's going to have a ripple effect all across the supply chain. And I think that's something we, as not just the United States, but the global community, will have to discuss and look at as how we build redundancy. In the immediate term, though, we have to ramp up our own manufacturing capabilities, make sure there's plenty of personal protective equipment for our first responders, our doctors, our nurses. But then also, if we don't have the testing reagents and the test kits, we should be ramping up and manufacturing our own as well. Again, that's to deal with the immediate crisis. Longer term, we really will have to take a close look at the supply chains of not just protective equipment, of testing equipment, but also of pharmaceuticals, because you have to have redundancy in the supply chain.
So everybody now, and you mentioned it before, that everybody is now talking about reopening the economy and how and when to do that. What signs would you like to see before you can comfortably say, let's reopen the economy?
So the metrics we have to look at before we can say it's safe to reopen the economy is hospital admissions. So the number of people that are showing up at the hospital and are sick enough to be admitted. The number of people who are in the hospital who are being admitted to intensive care units, ICU admissions, those are two very important metrics, which as long as those numbers are going up, we know that the virus is still spreading across our community. Once we see those numbers go down, we still may continue to see the number of new cases go up because as we ramp up testing capabilities, we certainly will be making more diagnosis. But, and we still may see the number of deaths continue to go up because that's the indicator looking back about 2 weeks as to where the community was. But once we see hospital admissions and intensive care unit admissions starting to go down, then we can say, well, maybe we're past this curve and we are on the downward side. We still will want to wait 2 weeks to make sure that there's not another recurrence or spread of the virus. But that seems to be the life cycle of the virus. And if cases come down, hospital admissions come down, ICU admissions come down. After that 2 week period, you can say, you know what, we may be ahead of this virus, and let's start thinking about those other measures of letting certain parts of the population that are less vulnerable return to the workforce, or at least start opening up some additional activities.
What message would you like to send to the Voice of America's worldwide audience at this moment during the pandemic?
To the folks that are watching on Voice of America, this pandemic is a wake-up call for all of us, both as a community, as the United States of America, but really as the global community. We're all connected. We are all in this together. This pandemic will impact all of our lives in many ways. But if we stick together, if we stay as a global community, we will come out of this stronger and more resilient and hopefully in a better place. And if we learn from this, we as a world will work together to prevent the next pandemic. We will work together to try to address the issues that this pandemic will expose, like vulnerable populations, et cetera. And it is my hope that we can come out in a more cooperative place as a planet.
美国国会共和党资深议员克里斯·史密斯表示，香港民主派的活动人士被捕的事件令人震惊。他还表示，香港特首应该保护香港人民的基本权利。来看报道。
美国国会众议院资深共和党议员克里斯·史密斯星期一发表声明说，特首林郑月娥必须立即澄清中联办是否受基本法规管。他还呼吁林郑月娥保护香港人的基本权利，抵制大陆政府或共产党在香港内政中的任何非法侵占。约15名香港民主派主要活动人士4月18日被拘捕，其中包括民主党创党主席李柱铭、前法律界立法会议员吴霭仪以及一传媒创办人林志英等。史密斯议员在声明中说，香港当局令人震惊的逮捕行动凸显出特朗普政府有必要确保我们的新法律要求进行的审议，这可能导致中国和香港政府官员的任意拘留和其他虐待行为实施制裁。特朗普总统去年11月签署了香港人权与民主法案，使之成为法律。史密斯议员是法案众院版本的起草人。史密斯议员表示，法案生效后需在180天内向国会提交报告，指出对破坏香港基本自由和自治负有责任的人。他说，这意味着报告可以在任何时候发布，但不能晚于2020年5月25日。史密斯议员是美国国会及行政当局中国委员会的首席共和党人，他就中国人权状况举行了超过60场听证会。美国之音新闻报道。
美国总统特朗普表示，为了应对新冠疫情造成的经济困境，美国将暂停移民。我们来看美国之音白宫记者黄杨毅的报道。
截至美国时间4月21号星期二的中午为止呢，美国境内感染了新型冠状病毒的病例人数达到了大约80万人，而死亡人数呢也到达了4万3000人。那么在4月20号星期一的晚上，特朗普总统在他的推特上发表言论说呢，他说要因应新型冠状病毒疫情所带来的经济冲击，他考虑要暂停移民。他的推文是这样写的，特朗普总统说呢，考虑来自隐形敌人的攻击以及保护伟大美国公民的工作需求，我将签署一项行政命令暂停移民进入美国。那么在星期二的上午呢，白宫的发言人麦克伊兰尼则是针对特朗普总统的说法也发出了声明表示支持。他是这样说的，他的声明当中说，面对这史无前例的时刻，特朗普总统坚定的要保护美国公民的健康和经济利益。正如特朗普总统所说的，几十年来的移民造就了我们公民的低工资和高失业，尤其在非裔美国人和拉丁裔的族群。此时正当美国人盼望回到工作岗位上，我们必须采取行动。那其实呢，在星期一晚上的白宫这个疫情的简报会上呢，特朗普总统也已经提到了他的这个移民政策，也就是要新建美墨之间的这个边境高墙。我们来听一下特朗普总统在白宫的简报会上是怎么说的。
While you're here, we're building the general's charge of the wall on the southern border, and we want to build 450 miles of wall, and it's very much under construction.
不过呢，特朗普总统还有白宫官员都没有针对所谓的暂停移民到底是针对哪一方面的移民，那是已经申请了移民会受到影响，还是新的移民会受到拒绝，还有呢要怎么样来进行，这方面呢都还没有提出具体的细节。此外呢，在星期二的将近中午的时候，白宫的国家安全顾问赖布莱恩呢则是接受记者访问。那么被记者问到呢，这个在星期一的晚上有新闻报道说朝鲜最高领导人金正恩可能病危的报道，那么对此呢，这个美国的国安顾问阿布莱恩则是说现在会密切的观察。那么提到新型冠状病毒的时候呢，他说这个病毒是来自中国，中国有责任要确保他们制造的防护装置可以送到需要的地区，并且呢美国要跟中国合作来确保不会再发生。那阿布莱恩同时呢他也呼吁说，中国要尽量的配合，让美国的这个调查人员能够到现场实地的勘察，来确保这个病毒到底是来自武汉的实验室还是来自野味的市场。以上是美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅发自白宫前的报道。
美国多地爆发抗议，反对政府为了应对新冠疫情而采取的社交隔离措施。与此同时，乔治亚州的州长率先宣布该州将于周五开始逐步重启经济。来看报道。
Freedom of speech, freedom of speech, you guys.
星期一，关于何时解除居家令的激烈辩论有所加剧，在更多的州爆发了示威游行，示威者要求结束封锁，在一些州抗议和反抗议者出现了对峙局面。
I don't want people to die. It's money versus lives. Tell me how it isn't. I want to hear your point of view.
Money and jobs is how we all provide for our families. I'm a self-employed business owner. My wife and I started a business about 10 years ago. My business is being decimated as we speak.
星期一在宾夕法尼亚州的哈里斯堡举行的这场有数百人参加的反封锁抗议活动中，许多人穿着亲特朗普的衣装，还有人携带枪支。他们聚集在州议会大厦外面抗议他们的公民自由遭到侵犯。上个星期，批评人士指责特朗普总统在周五一系列推文中煽动抗议活动，呼吁抗议者解放明尼苏达、密西根和维吉尼亚州，说第二修正案受到了危害。星期天，在科罗拉多州丹佛市，身着医疗服装的反抗议者站在路的中间，拦住一辆载有反封锁标语的汽车。在大多数州，为了减缓病毒的传播而实行的居家令和广泛关闭店面的措施已经使美国经济萎靡，并使至少2200万人失业，造成1930年代大萧条以来从未出现过的失业率。经济损害导致人们为放松社交距离等限制加大了呼声，尤其是最近几天，新冠肺炎住院率以及疫情爆发严重性的指标开始趋于平缓的情况下，更助长了这种呼声。一些州长和州卫生官员已经敦促谨慎行事，直到具有更多检测能力为主，同时警告说，如果封锁提前结束，美国将面临第二波甚至更致命的感染浪潮。纽约州是美国疫情最严重的地区，州长安德鲁·库莫在每日例行新闻发布会上说，他明白为什么有人抗议，但那样无济于事。
Nobody disagrees that we want to get out of this situation. Nobody. You don't need protests to convince anyone in this country that we have to get back to work and we have to get the economy going and we have to get out of our homes. Nobody.
库莫州长说，在纽约重新开放之前，测试能力要加大力度，并再次呼吁联邦政府帮助达成这个目标。特朗普总统在星期一的一系列推文中说，州长们已经从抱怨呼吸机匮乏转为担心没有足够的资源来大范围测试，指责他们是在玩非常危险的政治游戏。
Given the favorable data，
同时，乔治亚州州长宣布，乔治亚将从本周五，也就是4月24号开始逐步重新开放生意。
We will allow gyms, fitness centers, bowling alleys, body art studios, barbers, cosmetologists, hair designers, nail care artists, estheticians, their respective schools, and massage therapists to reopen their doors this Friday, April the 24th.
但乔治亚州不会照常重新开放所有营业场所，酒吧和夜总会将继续关闭。
Each of these entities will be subject to specific restrictions, including adherence to the minimum basic operations, social distancing, and regular sanitation.
包括俄亥俄、密西根、德克萨斯和佛罗里达在内的其他几个州也表示，他们还打算在5月1日或更早的时候重新开放经济活动。美国之音电视报道。
尽管中国各地陆续复工，新冠肺炎的疫情仍在发展。这场疫情对您的家人、生活和工作计划带来什么样的冲击和影响？您所在的社区和城市目前疫情如何？欢迎您通过电邮将您录制的音频、视频或文字图片跟我们分享。我们的电邮是 mystory@voanews.com mystory@voanews.com。也欢迎您留下您的联系方式，我们的记者会尽快与您联系。
在新冠疫情的冲击之下，美国的农产品需求大量减少，而在主要的蔬果产地加利福尼亚州，当地的农民不得不销毁一些还没有成熟的庄稼。来看报道。
在加利福尼亚州杰克维西的农场，拖拉机在一排排的绿叶生菜中犁过，但它并不是在收割这一季的蔬菜。相反的，它正在摧毁这些蔬菜。美国各地餐馆停业，冲击到全美的食物供应链，直接影响到农地里还没有采摘的农产品。加利福尼亚州是美国最大的出产水果和蔬菜的州。维西估计，这个生菜田将出产80,000多箱农产品，现在被毁掉了。他的意思是，价值100多万美元的食物被浪费掉了。
You know, you're seeing here behind me is very difficult, not just for me, on the economic side, but emotional side as well. Everybody on this ranch, it's kind of like their blood, sweat, and tears is in this crop. Many hours away from your family, producing a crop to maturity, and not to see it harvested and being able to feed the nation is stressful and hurtful and emotionally tough.
对维西来说，摧毁庄稼的决定并不容易。他不得不解雇150多个季节性劳动力。他说，他没有理由为没人要买的庄稼支付劳工、包装和储存的费用。西部农业协会主席戴夫·普利亚说，解决这场危机的唯一方法就是联邦采取措施，让像维西这样的农民能维持下去。
There was no way to anticipate that this would happen. If you're a farmer who made this investment, you couldn't have seen this coming. We need federal dollars to help bridge farmers through this moment and let them survive for another season.
维西对全美各地的农民能度过这场灾难仍怀抱希望，但目前他不得不让他的绿叶被切成碎片。美国之音新闻报道。
早在美国政府要求民众外出佩戴口罩之前，一位有着护士资格证的时装设计师就已经开始设计并且制作口罩。我们一起去看一看。
这是洛杉矶一名注册护士兼时装设计师的作品。
It does have elastic ear loops. It also has a nose wire to have it adjust to the size of your nose and to squeeze down.And then also there is a pouch.
In one on the other side.
在美国疾控中心修订其指南并开始建议人们戴上口罩之前，索尼亚·史密斯康一直在研究设计和制作口罩，充分利用服装公司多余的面料，因为他听说医护人员需要口罩。他将自己的作品放在社交媒体上，反应强烈。
All of a sudden, overnight, we got hundreds of not only requests from healthcare professionals, but also from individuals who may have underlying conditions or just want to shop or walk outside.
他每卖出一个口罩，都会捐赠一个给医护人员或急救人员。索尼亚已经向全国医疗保健工作人员寄送了数百个口罩。
As quickly as we're making them, we're shipping them.
根据销售手工制品的电子商务网站 Etsy 的说法，口罩是最近两周内搜索最频繁的产品。该网站甚至为制作口罩的卖家创建了指南。疾控中心建议人们在公共场合戴布口罩，因为研究表明，许多无症状新冠患者可以将病毒传播给他人，戴上口罩会有预防效果。
So you're not really trying to prevent somebody from infecting you. You're trying to prevent infecting other people.
菲拉斯扎巴涅监督休斯顿卫理公会8家医院的感染控制项目，他警告说，戴口罩的人仍然需要遵守6英尺的距离规则，并确保戴口罩时不要总去用手触碰它。
Humans are not used to wearing masks, so if they do not practice good hand hygiene, they can actually contaminate the mask if they keep adjusting it, removing it, wearing around the neck and so on.
疾控中心要求公众佩戴布口罩，把医用口罩和 N95 口罩留给医护人员。同时，索尼娅和他的团队将继续缝制、出售和捐赠口罩给需要的人。美国之音记者李爱琳，洛杉矶报道。
一位99岁的英国二战英雄，原本打算为抗击新冠疫情的医疗人员筹募1000美元，结果却筹募到了惊人的1600万美元。我们一起去看一看。
汤姆·摩尔上尉希望在他100岁生日前，在自己的花园里走100圈，为英国国民保健系统慈善组织筹款1000英镑。他不久前完成挑战的时候，已经筹集了大约1300万英镑，相当于1600万美元。而捐款仍在继续涌入。
It's unbelievable that people be so kind to give that source of money to the National Health Service, and maybe I was responsible for starting it, but not deliberately. It was purely, shall we say, gratitude for what they've done for me.
摩尔上尉所属团队的军人在他徒步的最后一圈为他组织了荣誉卫队。摩尔将于4月30日满100岁。他想为英国的国民保健系统筹募基金，以感谢他所谓的杰出员工。这些员工在治疗他的癌症和髋关节骨折期间照料他，捐款将立即分配运用。
It's going straight to the front line of the NHS, the staff, the volunteers, the patients, and supporting them.
英国卫生大臣最近代表全国发言。
Captain Tom, you're an inspiration to us all, and we thank you.
在二战期间，摩尔上尉曾在印度和缅甸服役，而现在他像大多数英国人一样，在封锁期间被困在家中。他的生存秘诀是保持乐观。
The thing is, remember, tomorrow is a good day. You can tomorrow you will maybe find everything be much better than today.
这是一个振奋人心的明智之语。他的募款努力将有助于拯救生命，并且证明一个人可以带来巨大的改变。美国之音记者李奇威尔伦敦报道。
一位艺术家为了表达对新奥尔良市一家医疗中心的工作人员的感激，在人行道上绘制了粉笔画来问候他们。我们一起去看一看。
这是个简单的举动，让医院的许多员工笑逐颜开。
So as you're walking in, it says, if you're just arriving, thank you for what you're about to do. And then as you walk a little bit further, it says, you are extraordinary.
这家医院儿科部门第一年的住院实习医生莱斯利·米勒会停下脚步，浏览这个神秘作家留下来的缤纷的信息。
And then as you leave and you're walking out to go home, it says if you are leaving, thank you, rest well. So it was very sweet of whoever did that. It definitely meant a lot to me, and it was a surprise, a colorful surprise walking out.
实验室技术员米歇尔·瓦马丁说。这些信息让人满心温暖。
Oh, it's nice. It's really nice. Yeah, give us hope.
新奥尔良在路易斯安那州，到目前为止，确诊的感染新冠病毒的病例已经超过20000个。奥克斯纳医疗中心是这个地区最大的医院之一，最近已经把常规病房转变为重症监护病房，以应付新冠病毒患者急增的需要。美国之音迪亚洛综合报道。
好的，以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容，感谢您的收看，我们明天节目再见。